Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris. And it's been a little bit of a time since we've gone back into the lab for one of our patented songs under the microscope. And I'm glad we chose this one because it's one that gets overlooked, I think, in a weird way because it's so famous, so well known. But to actually dig into Hello Goodbye has been a lot of fun. So what do you think, Chris? What was your, before you started studying it this week, what's your thought about Hello Goodbye?
Well, I always thought that maybe I liked it more than you do. Mm-hmm. And that maybe this was almost a agree to disagree on this. And I was thinking about why someone, not necessarily you, but like in general, why it gets a little overlooked and why it is maybe not considered in that top rank of tunes. And I think it's just because it came out later. It sort of almost harkens back,
yeah,
to the sort of like classic hit song, kind of in the vein of 8 Days a Week, Hard Day's Night, Can't Buy Me Love, where you've got a catchy kind of idea and phrase, and you've got just a well put together excellent hit song that hits the radio and went to number one, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if this had come out 2 years ahead of time, if it would be considered like more of a classic. The other side of Hello Goodbye is I Am the Walrus,
right,
which is like a sort of a more of a groundbreaking, amazing, blow your mind type thing. And this is, you know, on the other side is this very, very well put together kind of catchy hit.
The timing of this one is very interesting in the Beatles career. So we're 1967, just some demographics here, and then we'll get to that point. But recorded October 2nd to November 2nd, so over a month in 67, and then released around Thanksgiving in the U.S., November 24th, 1967, with, as you said, I'm the Walrus. So this is after Sgt. Pepper, after Magical Mystery Tour was recorded. So it's kind of it is like a throwback or a retro sort of tune, whereas I Am the Walrus fits very much into and was in a big scene in Magical Mystery Tour. It just seems a little bit out of place in a strange way.
Yeah. And then, of course, I wonder how much perception is altered by people who are feel like they're quote unquote more of a John guy, and then take what John's sort of pissy little negative vitriolic takes on some of Paul's songs that he did in a couple of interviews, probably when he was in, you know, bad moods, and just didn't John's take on this was it's nothing. That's one of Paul's little silly goofs.
Didn't he say you could smells a mile away of McCartney or something like that? It was one of those sort of slams.
Yeah, some sort of slam like that. And then it's like, oh, but I really like the ending of it. Mm-hmm. It's the most fun part of it, blah, blah, blah. You know?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like this sort of like thing that people do of like, oh well, John didn't like it, so now I don't like it too. I think people do that. Mm-hmm. I don't do that, but I do believe that people kind of, and you know, and probably difficult for John because he's like, hey, I Am the Walrus should be the A-side,
yeah,
big hit.
Yeah.
Why are we releasing this thing, which is a in his mind lesser song because it's not his.
Good point.
Right.
Good point. Because this is such a McCartney, like it really is. It does scream McCartney or smell McCartney a mile away. Because it's got everything in it that makes Paul Paul. Even to this day, I still think that a lot of just listening to this song a lot the past few days, it's musically extremely good and creative. Compositionally, it's the same way. It's got little subtle touches that are neat. The production is cool. The lyrics don't really mean a whole, like they're sort of, well, we'll get to that, but they're kind of, typical, oh, I've got an idea, let's do like opposites, and like a typical McCartney kind of jump on it idea. But even though the timing of it is odd in a way, because it's coming in the middle or right at the end of the psychedelic stuff, I do think there are a few elements of the song that get, that still have kind of a psychedelic sound to it, or that there's still carryovers from that period that we'll get to when we talk about the production and stuff.
Yeah. And so putting aside other people's
John's
views,
crankiness and
of it, spending some time with it this week, I at least have appreciated it more probably than I had because of a lot of that music, and it's mostly a lot of the musical stuff. There's a little 2/4 in there that creates a sort of like great kind of like turn feel that comes up repeatedly, and there's this other element of it which is this sort of stutter thing, this sort of like dar, 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 dar. And why
yeah,
you know, like, yeah, like that is intentionally kind of like maybe adding to what you're saying about sort of psychedelic kind of.
Well, it kind of ties in also to something, a subject we spoke about Phil Spector, and there's a quote I think that they sort of Phil Spectored it a little bit in the you'll hear these reverb, wah 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 wah, oh no, yeah, the guitar and the vocals. So it is this immense amount of echo and reverb, and that gives it sort of the trippier sound as well. So it is a period piece, I think, in a way. And yes, listening to it more and more, I started to hear a lot more than I had before. And I mean, do you want to get into the music or the lyrics first?
I think the music first, because it's really the, once again, just to skip ahead, when we're going to be talking about the cover versions, and this was the same way with the last Beatles song we talked about in the Under the Microscope. There's so many instrumental cover versions, and there's so many elements of the song that you don't really even think about being something that stands out instrumentally. But when you're really dissecting it, like we have been, those pop into focus.
Yes.
Where would you like to start with the music?
Well, I wanted to point out a couple of compositional things about the song. Two main things that stick out to me are the descending lines. There's the constant descending lines in the bass. Do, 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 do. I don't know why. And the chorus, I think that really stands out. And you hear the bass line. There's a little codetta at the end. So a bit at the end where he goes, whoa, 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 hello. That part's also got that descending. Yeah, it's got a descending bass line that moves down. So
that, and also there's that run.
Yes, the guitar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So the descending lines are really attractive to songs. There's something that grabs you, I think, about them. And then there's
do you think that the descending is sort of like the goodbye?
Oh.
And then because there's also that
kind of the inverse.
It could be like, let's do opposites. Some runs. Mm-hmm. Let's do some almost, because it, I was like, it's almost like a scale.
It is a scale
that
yeah.
they're playing there. But then they do the opposite of it in that song part I sang earlier.
Yeah. Well, that's that, and we'll get to that too, the guitar playing on here. And I know you listened to the anthology version of this, which has a lot more guitar licks on it and kind of weird sort of strange guitar licks. Yeah,
it's like, calm down, dude.
Yeah, George was really into it. But yeah, so the guitar work and how it fits in with the bass and the descending line really stands out. And then there's a really great chord in here that sticks out every time. It's the, if you're, we're in the key of C major, and it's an A flat chord, which is flat 6. You don't know why you say goodbye, I say hello. You've got, yeah. It goes, yeah, they've got that A flat chord in there, which is just that's a classic McCartneyism. It's one of his all time tricks. You hear that in a bunch of songs. So a neat chord in there that sticks out as well. So compositionally, otherwise, it's just very catchy. It's just very simple melody. Da 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 thirds. Da 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 da. So kind of simple tune to go with it.
Yeah, a simple but complex.
But complex in its own way.
And the layers put on there.
Right.
As well with the excellent background vocals.
So yeah, speaking of the instruments on here, you've got those. I want to hear your thoughts on the background vocals, especially in the last verse when they repeat the first. But I know you're a big fan of the two violas that are on this track that I had never listened to them that carefully until this week. And you always knew they were there. There was some string thing going on, but to actually dig in, they play throughout the song too, which I also hadn't noticed. Maybe it's the mixes that I can hear them better, but the two violas, unusual instrument to choose for this, a little bit darker sound, they add something to it as well. So
the darkness of it is, once again, is that duality thing that they're trying to match the hello and the goodbye.
So I like so just going down my list, the descending line, the flat six chord, the codetta with that dramatic chromatic descent. We Phil Spector'd the drums, which, by the way, Ringo sounds great on this too.
Oh, that was one thing I really wanted to bring up.
Yeah.
And in one of the cover versions is sort of a drum cover version.
Ooh, yes.
Where it really highlights the drums. Because the drums in this are just excellent. If we didn't have this in our Ringo's Best Drumming episode, then we made an error.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely terrific throughout.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Especially my favorite is the little touch with the hi-hat. You say yes, ch-ch, don't say no, ch-ch. Yeah, it's so great, and you can watch them. you can and there's several videos of this too that they're miming, but you can see Ringo how he plays it. So that's something, a big standout.
Well, and he's kind of going to town during when you're saying you say goodbye and I say, should be the cleanest part of the song. But he's like, boom,
a lot of fills. Yeah.
Yeah. Really filling around. And then, of course, with Ringo is that 2-4. I'm saying it poorly. Can you talk about the 2-4?
It is kind of, so you say goodbye for an unto doom.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yes.
Yeah. Really.
So
like
it's a 2-4 measure.
A punch,
and I punch. Say hello. Yeah.
It's sort of like, and then that's where they take off with their da da da
da da da da. Yes. Da 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 da. Exactly. So it's got it all. I mean, it's such in the double track McCartney lead vocal, and you like those background vocals, especially the you say yes, I say yes. they're not the same.
Stay till it's time to go.
Yeah. Really well crafted in there.
And then the coda, which is a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's excellent. Of course, you know how I love me loves me McCartneyisms.
Some good histrionics there on that ending.
Yeah, it gives you a woo-hoo, and it gives you a hey.
And a chuck, 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 chuck. Some great histrionics in there.
Yeah.
So that coda. Now there's some debate. I was looking at what people said. What are they actually saying? Are they saying "Hey la, hey ba, aloha" because they're Hawaiian, or is it "Hey la, hey ba, helloa"?
I would say it's the first, and there's a major clue, which is women in aloha dress skirts in the video during that section. Why would they put a bunch of Hawaiian dressed people, if that's not what they're saying, in the video. Which, by the way, the video is just three videos.
Yeah, there's three of them.
But the one, the main one that you usually see that's on the official Beatles YouTube channel and everything, which is really great, has John doing a little
posing, dancing
Elvis thing. and then they're dancing around at in the last section pretty wildly and having a lot of fun. So I think that video. Oh, and they're of course dressed in their Sgt. Pepper outfits.
Yeah, the video is fun to watch. Some of the YouTube comments on the video are funny because they say Paul excited, John and George bored, Ringo just there, kind of like. Which I don't know. I think it's a little much. George does look a little bored, but the others look like they're having fun. So,
well, you know, it was apparently this was Paul's directorial debut of the videos, and that there's like a pretty funny interview somewhere where he's saying, it's a lot harder than you think because people come up and they ask you, what about this and what about that thing? And you're like, I don't know.
Mm.
So
I guess he didn't learn much to take to Magical Mystery Tour.
The lyrics now, let's talk a little bit about that. So I think what we're saying about the music is that the music really does. I mean, the lyrics on first blush are very, very simplistic, you know, and of course how they wrote it, you know, I guess he was like, oh, you say the opposite. I'll say something and you say the opposite.
Blah, with blah, Alistair blah. Taylor.
With Alistair Taylor. But here's from Many Years From Now by Barry Miles, which I think adds just a little bit of a something to it. Hello, Goodbye was one of my songs. This is Paul talking. There are influences here, I think. Geminian influences here, I think. The twins. It's such a deep theme in the universe. Duality. Man, woman, black, white, ebony, ivory.
Ooh.
High, low, right, wrong, up, down, hello, goodbye. That was a very easy song to write. It's just a song of duality, with me advocating the more positive. You say goodbye, I say hello. You say stop, I say go. I was advocating the more positive side of the duality, and I still do to this day.
Hmm. That kind of sums him up pretty well, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sums him up pretty well. And what's wrong with that? It's good. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a, and you know, now I'm thinking, was this a prequel to Ebony and Ivory?
I wonder. Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, it's obviously, there's a kids bop and a Glee version of this and mm-hmm. several baby goodnight versions of this. So it is kind of like, you know, considered to be a relatively simple tune and lyrically and, you know, obviously you'd have to be almost catatonic not to be able to learn the lyrics, you know. So
with that in mind, let's take this as an idea of, I know there was some argument about having I Am the Walrus or Hello Goodbye as the A side. What do you think it would have been like if I Am the Walrus were the A side and Hello Goodbye was the B side? Would we know Hello Goodbye? I mean, it was such a huge hit. It was number one everywhere, pretty much. It was ubiquitous. But what do you think about I Am the Walrus? Would that have changed things?
You know, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
It really is. It really is hard to say because I always think that when people take a risk and release the odder song, there's usually great results.
Mm.
Bohemian Rhapsody is be a good example. In no way, shape, or form should that have been released as a single, you would think.
No, not be a big hit.
A conventional wisdom, but of course it's, you know, all-time classic, huge hit, you know. So I would think I Am the Walrus would have a similar response. Like, oh my, like people would, you know, people's minds were blown by it still as a B-side.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't feel like a B-side, you know. It feels like a significant piece of work. This song feels like a less significant piece of work and more of a hit.
Oh, it definitely got the hit potential, a hit-making material to it. Yeah.
So you can almost, like, it's almost undeniable you have to have this be the A-side. Maybe the key is, like, have this be the A-side and dredge up, you know, some sort of something else to throw on as a B-side. And then release I Am the Walrus as a A-side and see what happens.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting experiment to see. But I think they made the right call in terms of wanting a hit. And it kind of, like I say, it has it all. And it did appear in... It was on Magical Mystery Tour album in the U.S., and it was also at the end of the movie. So it was another way to bring in, to get that current sound and get that song in there. It's over the credits. You can see it at the end of the movie. Yeah, so I think it's like I was saying at the beginning, it really does, to me, have all the elements of classic McCartney. So it's really well-crafted, interesting production. Lyrics are... simple or less profound, but still fine enough, and hit making earworm material for sure.
Can I just ask you, did you feel less about this song before this week?
I did. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was I don't want to say it was a skipper for me, but it just seemed like fluff, slight kind of. All right, I've heard that song way too many times if it comes on, but to study it, as we found out in some of these microscope songs, you really start listening to the layers and the levels and the musicality, and maybe, like you said, it gets a bad rap, and I probably fell into it because of the John versus Paul. I've been colored by that kind of thinking.
I think many people have.
Yeah.
You probably can sense I've always been just slightly more of a Paul than a John guy. But you do talk to John people and they're like, "Oh, Paul's writing so bad, blah 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 blah." And I'm like, "You're crazy."
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
What are you even talking about?
No. No, that's ridiculous. And not everything John did was amazing either. And by the end of the Beatles, he was barely able to come up with decent songs. So, and meanwhile, Paul just keeps cranking them out one after another. So there's something to that craftsman technique that he has.
And this is in the same, like I said, in the same vein as A Hard Day's Night. It's like a catchy thought, you know, and You Say Goodbye, I Say Hello, as maybe not as
profound,
profound as A Hard Day's Night, or as maybe Can't Buy Me Love is more of a
that's
like
a good
similar kind of to that, you know.
Either way, it's still I think it's very successful and it earned its stripes, and I'm glad that it made me more appreciative of it, really digging in. But I know that, as always, you have dug far down into the well to find some covers, and before we started recording, I said that I only really knew one particularly well, which is the Bud Shank version, but you've got a whole slew here.
Yeah, you know, once again, like I said, mentioned before, there are a lot of instrumental versions, probably equal to the amount of non-instrumental versions. And I would say nothing that was like Bud Shank might be the best one, that's just an instrumental one. Bud Shank, alto saxophonist, sort of a very swanky jazz version.
Yes.
So check out the Bud Shank. You're going to definitely want to check out Jimmy DiCucci and his Exciters.
Can you spell that?
T-A-K-E-U-C-H-I.
Okay, Takuchi.
Japanese drummer. And I was mentioning Ringo. This is it's odd to get a cover of a song that focuses on the drum part so much.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's interesting. A few more cymbal hits
than Ringo
in the Beatles version. And then there's a just an absolutely beautiful one from Francois Gloriot, Belgian pianist, composer, conductor, and teacher. And that one's just very, very subtle and beautiful and quite good. Now the non-instrumental ones. Oh my Lord. A lot of them are bad. Just bad, bad, bad. And I'll mention a few bad ones. But one of the most, and we talked about this when The Art of McCartney came out, The Cure did this, and it wasn't just The Cure though, Dave.
No, there was a special guest intimately associated with Sir Paul.
The Cure and James McCartney. And you can see them in their studio footage in the video on YouTube, the official Art of McCartney video. So the Cure, and it doesn't even mention James McCartney.
No.
He's obviously there in the video, just like you know, pretty straightforward. That's the thing about these cover versions. I'm not gonna mention them if it's just like some other band and they play a straightforward version of it,
right?
Unless that person's like extremely notable. Here's a couple of other ones you're definitely gonna want to check out though. Modulos. Okay. This is
Modulos
from 1970. Was an extraordinaire band formed in 1969, unfortunately too late for the classic rock of the 60s. And when the Spanish labels were not decided for supporting the winds of change coming from the outside.
Ooh,
that was a write-up I saw about Modulos.
Ooh.
I'm like, what are you even talking about? Spanish labels were not decided for supporting the winds of change coming from the outside. Okay.
Okay. Great. So they're a Spanish group.
The Spanish group. And it's a sort of a wild kind of hippie nightmare version of this song, which is a must listen. Very, very interesting one. I like it. Two worst, though. I have to bring up the two worst. Peter Hoffman, who's a rock singer turned opera singer turned pop singer. I played
already bad. That's already a bad intro. Yeah.
It's just too. Oh, hello, hello. Like, it's too, like, opera singer. Hello. He's got that wobbly kind of thing happening on notes. It just doesn't work.
Very stiff instrumental background, too.
Yep. And then there's one that could go on Golden Throats. It's so bad, Dave. And this is from 1995, amazingly.
Oh.
I don't know why they're doing this in 1995, but this is Bugs and Friends. Okay, Bugs and Friends sing the Beatles. It's like, great. And they turn Hello Goodbye into like a Who's on First routine between Bugs and Daffy Duck.
Awesome.
Very, very crazy. So I might check out some more Modulos. I see there's a Yesterday.
Some other Beatle covers.
5 minutes and 16 seconds long.
Wow.
The Hello Goodbye is 4:45 and has a lot of crazy stuff going on. So, yep. So there's my cover version. We'll put the link to all that somewhere.
Yeah.
Just try to find it.
We'll find it. We'll see if we can put it together in the Spotify list. Pretty good. I thinking about singles in 1967. This one I think is certainly the most poppy sounding. And the most retro, as you say, but still, I mean, the Beatles never got rid of that ability to make a hit, and that all the way through their whole career they were able to do it. So it kind of is an interesting time, but refresh. It sort of sounds fresh in a way after the thickness and layers and all the psychedelic stuff. This kind of really stands out to me. So it's like, nice pop tune, yay!
You know, I've always liked it. But I was surprised at how not bored I got with listening to it.
Yeah.
The Anthology 2 version, maybe I got bored of that.
Yeah, check that out if you haven't heard it in a while. It's because it's got all these extra guitar licks on it, and it doesn't have the full orchestration on it either. It's a little thinner.
Yeah.
Well, this was fun. It was good to chat about this. And before we go, we're going to put out a call to you because we're coming up on episode 175. And we want to have another special audience questions episode. So if you have questions you want us to answer about about us, about the Beatles, about your favorite this or that, or rank this or that, or whatever, please feel free to send it to us at our email address, which is ivegotabeatlespodcast@hotmail.com. I'll put that also in the description, as always. But we'd love to answer some questions. We did this for our, I can't remember which one it was. Was it 125 or somewhere along the way?
Somewhere along the way.
But like it was a lot of fun. So please feel free to send us any questions that you want us to answer. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be great. We'll obviously have a couple shows in between now and then. Hopefully we get some news. We have had no news.
No, it's been very quiet.
Very quiet on the news front. So we'll see. We'll see if something pops up news-wise, and hopefully we can get some new releases. That's all I'm doing, Dave, these days, is buying like way too expensive records. And, you know.
Yes. Well, I have a feeling there are going to be plenty more expensive records coming out soon. So
we'll
look forward to that. All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next time.